Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
You are back in the House of Mystery, and of course, I'm Al Warren, and Mr. Michael Hawley is hanging out in Buffalo.
Hello, Al. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I had 4.5 feet of snow just a little bit ago. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, I was getting a little worried, you know. And pictures of, you know, what's going on with you, all that karate going on in those pictures and stuff.
Oh, the Aikido stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, somebody's got to do it.
That's kind of scary. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I always tell my everybody that my wife was a nationally rated judo player, and so I'm afraid of her. So I had to get involved with that stuff because she was winning all the time.
Oh, yeah. So. I could see that. She's pretty tough. I mean, my God, she's got legs like Superman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, stranglehold, you're done.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so we've got a great guest today. We've got a doctor. He's going to tell me how I can get better. I know one show isn't enough. I'm going to have to go see this guy regularly. So I was listening to the Madonna Erotic album, just kind of getting ready for it. So
I'm there you upset. Go.
So we've got Mr. Actually, I should say Dr. Joe Court. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Nice meeting you.
Yeah, Joe, I have to ask, right off the start, like, there's all sorts of psychologists and psychiatrists and clinics and people doing mental health and sexual health and all sorts of stuff out there and stuff. How did you get involved in that, where you decided you wanted to make it a career?
So I was in psychotherapy as a teenager. I was 14 years old, and I was gay, and I was struggling. And, you know, it's 1977 or whatever at the time. And so my mother, I started getting isolating myself and moving toward a depression. And so she brought me to a place called Jewish Family Services. And I saw this man named Stephen Advocate, who was my very first therapist, who I still talk to every once in a while. I found him later in life. And he helped me, you know, with my sexuality, my fantasies, my being gay, everything. And I remember thinking, I used to see him twice a week, which is unusual for a teenager. But I remember thinking, this is what I want to do for a living. And I did.
Yeah. I guess you, from your point of view and your side, when you're sitting with people and talking to them, you get something out of it as well, right?
Something out of it as being the therapist for people?
Yeah.
Well, I really love the idea of helping people. And so I guess I do, yes. I like that they value what I have to say and take, and it has an impact on their life.
Yeah, and I think it's good. I mean, what do you think the, what's the biggest problem you've come across in the last few years, in average?
Yeah, it's hard. I'll tell you, but I'm not a typical therapist, you know,
right.
So because I'm seeing so many erotic and sexual and different things. But the biggest issue that I see, I'll just say with couples, heterosexual couples, is discovering they have a mixed erotic interest. So that, you know, she discovers his porn, or she comes out with a fantasy that he didn't know about, and that they feel like they're in a stalemate.
I guess it's a tough thing, you know. And also, I guess you see there's a lot of straight guys or married guys that want to have, you know, sex or want to play with other men.
Yeah, so that I wrote a book in 2014 on that called Is My Husband Gay, Straight, or Bi? And I did it because I started to see an increase in men revealing to me that they were not attracted to men, but that they were interested in having sex with men. And so there were all these reasons that had nothing to do with being gay, nothing to do with being bi. So, yes, that's probably the number one thing that I see in my office.
Well, how do you explain that then? I find that hard. I'm finding that hard to understand because I'm gay myself, but I don't understand how you could not be if you're attracted to another man. Like if you want to have sex with someone, it can be pretty intimate, personal, and it can be fun. So I'm sort of confused on how you could want to do that if you're not attracted to that.
It's a great question. And, you know, I went viral on TikTok in December of 2020 on this actual topic. And several of my videos went viral because it blows people's minds. People understand that straight women will have sex with women and still be straight. Gay men can have sex with women and still be gay. Lesbians can have sex with men and still be lesbians. But a straight guy? No. We draw the line there. That's how people feel. I'm like, hold on. That doesn't make any sense. And so here are the top reasons that I see in my office about these men. The number one reason, I'm a therapist, remember, is trauma reenactment. They've been sexually abused as children by male perpetrators. So it's not about sexual urges for men. They're called trauma urges. It's gotten eroticized. So they're reenacting their own abuse in their adulthood by having sex with men. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see that. Now, when you say that, it kind of, I can understand that.
The second reason is many straight men enjoy anal play and anal sex, receiving it, because they like their prostate played with. So they're either too embarrassed to tell their wives, or their wives think they're gay because they want that, you know. And so then they find men to do this, and they're not attracted to the men that they're doing this with. They want the act. The act is what's turning them on. So it's a transactional act. And many of them come in my office saying, if I want this, everybody's telling me I'm gay if I want to receive anal sex. And I say two things to them. First of all, I'm a gay man, and I never wanted anal sex. I've never topped. I've never bottomed. I'm not interested in that. And your anus doesn't have a sexual orientation. It doesn't know whether it's gay, straight, or bi. It's an anus. So my anus isn't trying to tell me I'm straight, and your anus isn't trying to tell you that you're not.
Yeah, well, and that's, and you started that term side, I believe, right?
Yes, I coined that term in 2013. And it was because of my own shame. You know, I used to have friends that would say, you know, well, you're not having sex. Come on. You haven't met the right guy. Someone hasn't done it right to you. You need to open up and relax. And none of that was true. I was never, it's never been erotic. So we were talking one day, and I said, why does everybody have to be a top or a bottom? Why can't someone be a side? And all my friends laughed. And I was like, I don't even think that's funny, actually. I think that's a good word. So Grindr picked it up this last year, and now it's become a thing in the community.
So you'll be known as Dr. Side.
I would love that. If that's my claim to fame, I'm very proud of it. I no longer have any shame about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, but for those men that, let's say, are reenacting some sort of an abuse or something, some sort of pattern they had when they were young, is it good for them then? Like, do they feel good when they have sex with men, or is this sort of, because that reenactment might not necessarily be good or happy.
No, it doesn't feel good. They end up feeling a lot of shame, and it's compulsive and out of control. It's erotic for them because the pain has gotten anesthetized from the eroticism of it. But you have to remember, in all of the cases about these straight men, they're not attracted to men in general. They're attracted, so they might be into, like, let's say, a kink or a fetish. And so maybe spanking or BDSM or whatever. And the gender is secondary to the act. The act itself is what's turning them on. And so people, when they hear my straight men who have sex with men, they think, well, how can you have sex if you're not attracted to the person? Many people have sex because they're attracted to the act. And that's what these men are attracted to.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, so really the wife could put a strap on if she.
Yeah.
That's now see, it's getting personal for Michael here.
Oh, that is correct. Yep.
Yeah, there's a word for it, right? Pegging. And if she's willing to do this, the men are more than happy to stay just with her. But sometimes I will have to say there are some straight men that want the real thing, because I don't know why. It helps them feel submissive. It helps them feel like somebody's in charge of them. But most of the straight men, once their wives or female partners are willing to do it, they'd rather just do it with them.
In general, right now, there's sure a lot of I don't know, controversy and a lot of negative attitude toward gays and homosexuals, you know, with all this political stuff going on and stuff. So there's people that, you know, they're made to feel bad. What's the best thing someone can do about that?
You mean for somebody who is LGBT?
Yeah. When you're sort of, I think I get a little worried about how I see things going in the U.S. and how there's a real fight, let's say. And I kind of think about people that are younger being worried about being who they are, you know, and,
I know.
You know, and all of that stuff, you know, Jordan Peterson and all of his, what's he wants everyone to be repressed or something. It's like he seems to be, preaching that sort of thing rather than, moving forward. So, you know, there's kind of a backlash I worry about.
I know, you know, it's really sad. I'm 60 years old and, you know, it's a, really like it's almost the same thing as when we were younger. You know, when you used to see hate is not a family value, but the Republicans were all about family values. Family values don't include same-sex couples. They don't include marriage. They don't include having children. And so I think the what people need today is what we needed back then even, which I went for cover in, which was community. I immersed myself in the community, getting with allies, people that supported me and loved me. I mean, this is different for teens. Teens are stuck in their own situations, unfortunately. But if you're not, but they can at least go online and find community for shelter. And I think that's the most important thing to do.
Yeah, it's kind of a, you know, it's a very unusual time right now. I can say for sure. I'm not sure what to think. Sometimes I don't even want to watch the news anymore, you know.
It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dr. Court, you graduated at Michigan State, didn't you?
I did in 1985.
And so did I. And I, I'm 60. So I lived in Mason Abbott. Were you close to that?
Oh, no. I was in Holden and Case and Holden and Case and Wilson.
Oh.
I was in all three of them.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Well, it was the same time. And a couple things happened. One is that I remember taking a human sexuality course. Did you ever take that course?
Was that with Barclay?
Yes.
I love that. I remember him like yesterday. Yes, I did.
So, but I remember what they did was, is although they didn't say LGBT back then, there was a, I think it was called the Gay Council, and they had 10 people sit down in front of us and talk to us about this.
Yes. Yep.
And then, so, I'd be so curious to see if we actually met. But if you recall, our freshman year, Magic Johnson was supposed to be there as a senior, but of course he went to pro as his junior year. But then when he said that he got AIDS, he said he got AIDS at Michigan State. And then I was curious about with the diseases like that, is that something that you have to deal with your patients? And have you, it has been that long that you had to do with this?
Yes, I. It's not a big part of my practice. You know, people think because I'm gay and I write about gay and, you know, all my stuff, that most of my practice is gay, but it isn't. I probably have 25% of the population that come and see me are LGBT. So, okay. And that's been throughout my entire time in practice. But, yes, I see people that are either on PrEP, right, or they're HIV positive, taking medications, or they're I mean, really, that's more of it. I don't really see anybody who's struggling with it or sick with it. They're living with it. So I do have I do see that.
Okay. Okay. And then and the state of Michigan is generally, as when I remember, that was probably, I can see why it was really rough on you at in your teenage years. And you were in the suburb of Detroit, though, right?
Yeah, I was suburb of Detroit. And if you recall, when AIDS became a big deal, Reagan wouldn't even say it. Reagan did nothing. And it was so awful. And I remember being really afraid because when I went to Michigan State, AIDS was coming out really badly in the East and West Coast. It wasn't really bad here. I didn't really know about it until 84. So between 81 and 84, even into 85, I slept with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of guys. I have a journal somewhere in my house. I have to go find. I always say this. I want to go find it because I journaled each guy, and I was convinced that I was going to be HIV positive.
Oh,
convinced.
Boy.
But I wasn't, and I think it's because I'm a side.
That's what I was nervous about, because here's Magic Johnson claiming that that's where he got it, at Michigan State. So
you're nervous you got it from him?
Well, that's, you know.
No, I never had any interaction. I remember hearing about him, though, up there.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, he would come back to play the softball, and so him and his huge smile. So.
Yeah, right.
So what are the 10 smart things that gay men can do to improve their lives?
You're going to my first book.
I want to write this down. No,
yeah, all right.
Is there actually really 10 things you can do to improve your life, or what's kind of...
Oh, there's more than 10, I should have done a sequel. But those 10, they were, at the time, it was about coming out and getting out of your gay adolescence. I think a lot of gay men never leave their adolescence. I think a lot of men never leave their adolescence. And women really force it out of them, you know, force them out of it because they demand responsibility and being part of the, you know, having to be a certain, behave in a certain way to be a part of the family and a father. And gay men don't demand that from each other. So that was one of my strongest chapters is how do we get past all this Peter Pan syndrome, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that the times are much better now. Because I think of myself, because I'm 60 as well, but I can think of myself, you know, being in school and being autistic and colorblind, left-handed and gay. And I couldn't have been through a bumpier road because I was doing everything wrong. And
wow,
and,
yes.
You know, in the eyes of the teacher and the parents, I was kind of not doing things right. But I think things are much better now. I especially see that with autism.
It's so much better with autism. So my husband and I have been together 30 years and he's autistic. At the time, you know, people always say, how do you know? We never had any formal testing. There really is more formal testing for younger children than there are for adults. But we were together 17 years, and I saw this movie called Adam. Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah, yes.
That was the solidifying thing that made me – that movie, almost every scene is just like Mike. The guy from Big Bang Theory, Sheldon, yeah. Just like Mike.
Right.
And I started seeing it in adults in my practice, and I looked at him one day, and I said, I think this is you. We don't call it Asperger's anymore, but we did at the time. And he's 67. He's really struggled in childhood with that.
Yeah, it was tough.
Understand.
Yeah, because, yeah. Well, you know, and not only that, teachers weren't thinking of that. That wasn't on their mind in the 60s.
No, right.
You know, I was being slapped for using my left hand. That was their concern. But, you know, I think times are much better now for gay.
Where were you raised that they did that? Because I'm left-handed, too. They never had that slapping. I always thought that was before.
I went to school in Vancouver, British Columbia when I was young.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. And, you know, I was born in a Catholic hospital, like so I had that kind of an upbringing, and they were very strict and, you know, which was good in some ways for me. But everything, when you didn't fit totally or do what everybody else was doing, they kind of looked at it as bad. I was being bad and being very quiet as well. I would not really respond a whole lot. So.
Well, Al, you do have a potty mouth, so is that where it came from?
Well, you know, when I came out big, right? They haven't kicked me off air yet. How does your practice affect your own life?
God, that's such a great question. Oh, my God, it's a really good question. How does it affect my life?
I always
life?
Surprise people. That's why I'm here. That's why I've got the job, you know, because I sound silly and I sound like Howard Stern, and then all of a sudden it becomes... the good questions. No, I think about that a lot. I think about that. I ask this of a lot of people, not just what you do, but different jobs that we talk to people. I always think, well, how does that, you know, like police detectives and things like that. And it's like, well, how does that affect your life? Like, how do you bring that home? How do you respond? Does it change the way you are? It must, of course, but I always find that interesting.
That's a great question. All right. So there's two things that I don't like working with because I do take it home and I don't think it's fair for me to work with teenagers. I love teens, but I don't like their families and I don't like the situations that they're in. And then when we do good work and they improve and the family still is screwing around with them and making things worse, then we're back to square one. I used to hate that. So I made a decision many years ago, no teens. And if somebody is terminally ill, and see, I'm in this field because I want to help somebody get better. So for me, when somebody's terminally ill, I know that there are ways to make them feel better as they're dying. But for me, just knowing they're dying, it's overwhelming. I have to tell you, I'm 60 years old, and nobody important to me in my life has ever died. My mother's still alive. My father just died, wow. But he wasn't important to me. I know. I have never had, and I'm not bragging about it. I'm scared to death of the day something does. But what the practice has done for me is normalized me. The therapist will probably never admit this, but I have learned how normal I am, how not unusual I am, I've actually been able to hear partners arguing with another partner, and it'll be something Mike has been trying to say to me for 10 years. I fight him on and don't hear him. And then suddenly I hear him through a client. So I've learned a lot about myself from my own clients.
I could see that. And I think that's really important. I think that kind of makes the fulfillment of the job too, doesn't it?
It does. It makes it very fulfilling to me. And just watching people get better. People always ask, you know, don't you get sick of me? I'm in the same situation every week. And I'm like, that would be like saying to a trainer, aren't you sick of me? We're doing the same exercise over and over again. That's the way exercise is, and that's how you build muscle. That's the way therapy works. You're building emotional muscle.
Do you think the world of psychology and all that, do you think that it's portrayed really well in movies and TV shows and all that? Do you find that you like seeing that type of a show because it's done well, or not so much?
No, I think it's rarely done well. You know, they're sleeping with their clients, they're friends with their clients, they're having sex with their clients. So no, I don't. I think that's not normal. No, you can lose your license.
Oh, yeah.
So no, I mean, I think there's some things like, what was that movie, The Italian? I never watched it. The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Right, they had a good, I guess I used to hear about it, I never watched it, but one of them was in therapy, and then his therapist was in therapy, and I thought that was a good representation.
Hey, I have a question, Dr. Court. You may have answered it, but I was curious. My wife and I, we have 6 kids, and
wow.
I actually stopped at 4, but I don't know what happened. They look like, the younger two look like the mailman. I don't know what that means, but don't tell anybody, I don't know. So, but my question is this, because we are 60, and when we were younger, Al made a point about it, is like it was a little bit different. Now, the parents, though, they will go through, let's say, their kids, and if one of their kids is showing that they're gay, do you have you ever had to deal with parents that to go through and to be healthy, for, you know, to make sure they do healthy things for their children in that condition?
Yes, yeah. You mean, so I used to work with families where the kids are coming out. Is that what you mean?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's really hard for them because most parents have not examined their own sexuality. Most parents haven't examined their own gender identity. And most parents can't imagine their children as anything other than what they envision them to be. And it's really hard to get parents to see all this.
So
instead, they're focused on the child and the way they see the veil is, I'm being protective of them, but they're not. They're being protective of themselves.
So what you're trying to say is our generations are idiots.
I do think our generation are idiots. And unwilling to learn and grow and understand what all these new terms mean and where kids are coming from. They're too scared.
Right. The other question I had was more on the psychology side. Al and I, we're into serial killers. Are we weird?
No, I guess I'd want to know more about why, and that would determine whether or not they're weird. A lot of people are into serial killers. They love to watch it on TV. There's all these series all over the place about it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, I'm more into I've had 29 books published now, and I'm more more into the story. You know, when I'm doing when I'm going through it, I meet the family, I meet a lot of the members, and I try to write a story about what's happened. And it's more about the things that I don't even get into the gore or the crime so detailed as to what everyone goes through during and after, you know, when the spotlight's off, what happens. So I'm a little bit more detailed like that. I don't really write into the actual, killing events as much like Mike does. So he's the psycho.
I'm always into that part. I need to know how the psychopath works, how, you know, the lack of remorse is just so intriguing to me.
I don't think you're weird, but I don't know that I would understand it. That's out of my wheelhouse.
So what do you think about all of the young generation and the whole new gender identities and things like that? I like for myself, I'm fairly open. I kind of look at things like we did things when we were young and we moved the world forward and they're going to do the same thing. And of course, it's not going to be totally something we get or something we would do. But I don't see the big issue. But there's a lot of people, like I said, and I bring up Jordan Peterson again, because there's a lot of people pushing against it and saying how bad it is and trying to make it sound really evil that young people want to take on different gender identities and stuff like that. What's your take on that?
I actually think it's wonderful. I love this generation, because what they're saying is, I'm not going to wear a label that was created by you, parent of 40, you know, 60 years ago, whatever. I'm going to create my own boutique identity rather than fit myself into some other box that doesn't fit for me. So all these new terms and all these new identities, gender-wise, sexuality-wise, I love, because they're informing us of the nuances we overlook. So we used to think everyone was just gay and straight and male and female. Well, that was never true, but that's all we would see. So then we saw bisexuality, but then that's not enough. There's bisexual plus now, all these other ways of expressing your orientation. And in terms of gender, that's the exact same way. And I think people get uncomfortable because young kids, you know, as early as 8, 9, 10 are coming out about this. And people think, well, you know, that's not normal for an 8 or 9 or 10-year-old or even a 12-year-old to do. And the truth is, it is normal. There was never permission given to these children to examine anything but heterosexuality, being cisgender, and that's it. That's all you had. So if you were anything else, you had to be quiet. You couldn't even talk to God, because you would learn in school that God thinks you're an abomination. Today, kids are like,
how dare you?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to open up about it.
Right, right. But so do you think that it's going in the good direction then? Do you think this is a good thing? Like the next generation after this one will probably go even in further, or who knows, you know, what the next yes. generation will go. But do you think it's the positive move? Because I've seen a lot of, just this last couple of weeks, a ton of different videos and people and Pierce Morgan and all these people having guests on, and the guests were, you know, 8-year-old kids at one time, and now they're 16 and they decided they want it to be a girl or a boy or whatever they want it, and now they've wrecked themselves. And that there's a lot of that going on. I just wonder what that's all about.
So there's not a lot of that going on. There's a lot. They're the ones given microphone,
right,
to talk about it, but it's only 2%. So that's what people don't know. It's only 2% of people that identify as trans that detransition or have felt like they wrecked themselves. So absolutely it can happen. And even the field of gender is saying to us, slow down, be very mindful with these children. You know, because we were excited at first, wanting to help them, be activists, be supportive, and not get in their way, because there's been so much suppression. And a lot of the organizations today say, don't foster suppression, but be very more mindful. But it's really only 2%, but it seems like there's a lot because they're given the microphones.
Yeah, they get all
the attention. Not only are they given the microphones, sometimes politically, let's say on one side of the political spectrum, they enjoy causing fear in their voters, so they'll vote, saying, oh, you know, the country's going south, you got to vote, let's get rid of them. So they'll kind of not say anything about 2%, they'll say 60%.
Yes, yes, and they don't just induce fear, they induce disgust. And the more disgusted someone is, that determines how they're going to vote.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wonder if we'll ever get out of this. I don't know, maybe I'm really naive, because it seemed to me that in the 90s, when we had Madonna running around and we were, you know, everybody was doing stuff, I just thought that this was all going to get resolved and moved on. It wouldn't be such a big issue as it is now, today. So
did I.
You know.
So did I. And then when Bill Clinton was talking about, he was being more positive, he was mentioning gay, and then we had Obama. Actually, the 8 years of Obama, I was under the impression that we were beyond a lot of this. In fact, I would meet with other leaders in the field and they'd say, do we even need to write about this stuff? Like, what are we doing? But that it was just a veil, because as soon as he was out of office, everything went back to how it always was.
Yeah. I think that was a backlash, because the first time we had a black president, I mean, it was a serious threat going on.
Yeah.
So it looks like that was the backlash right there, one of them.
I agree. Yeah.
It's really sad. I think what it does is, for people like me anyway, I recognize how much further we still really have to go. to accept really each other. You know what I mean? It just seemed like it was going, and I felt like we made great gains, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, look at these people and what they're saying and what they're doing. And it's like, wow, what happened?
Well, and I'll tell you what really, I really don't understand this from a sociological perspective. I just know what's happening. Is that there's always been a lot of infighting in the LGBT community. I always say we're not really a community. On the day of a parade, and we're Pride Fest, we're out there all together. But at night, the lesbians go to their land, the gay men go to their land. Nobody wants the bisexuals, and nobody wants the transgender. That's the gist, even in this younger community. And there's all this gatekeeping. You can't, I've actually been targeted many times because I'm white male and I'm cisgender. And people will say to me, you know, you can't talk about people of color. You can't talk about anyone else who you're monosexual. You can't talk about bisexual or bisexual plus. And it's like, rather than allowing us to learn from each other and having being allies with one another, there's a dividing of each other. I can't stand that.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I do, within the community itself. I agree totally. I don't feel part of much, like even of the writing communities. I'm more in the straight writing communities than the gay ones. You know, I think mainly because what I write about isn't necessarily so gay.
that's right. Sure, that might be.
Yeah,
but it's a
confusion. Hey, Al. Though I was curious because of Al, he about your some of your writing was about that, but it took the gay side on a bad side of the.
The Killer Queen series.
Yes.
Actually, they're making it. They're making a TV series like Discovery is doing.
Oh, yes.
And so, really? It's great. Whatever. But the thing is, in the community itself, they're really not happy with it. They think that I'm bringing the attention to, you know, gay killers. And it's not that away at all. If you've read the books are like Leopold and Loeb and some of the big cases that have happened. I'm more talking about their relationship. And then the relationship with the community. What did the world think of them at the time? And how easy it was for them to respond to them being, oh, they're gay, so they're criminals. You know, even the 80s and stuff. And I bring out different things that police chiefs and different people have said in political circles. Well, I'd never hire a gay person for the police because they're already criminals. You know, things like that. I think my point was, how we act and reacted over the years to different gay people. But the community just kind of thought I was being kind of an attack on it, you know?
Well, and that's what's sad about the community. They do it to me, too, with my TikToks, my 60-second videos that I make, and then they only watch 20 seconds of them, and they have a knee-jerk reaction about what they think I've said or what that I'm dangerous because I didn't say this or I should have said that. And then they move on, and it sounds like they're doing that with your books. Yeah. Rather than quiet yourself, listen to the author, listen to the watch the whole video. Let's have good discourse. It's important for you to say this to me, but hear me too. Just because you have a feeling about what I've said doesn't mean that makes it the truth. And it sounds like that happened with your books. I'm sorry to hear that.
So I was going to say the book, the nonfiction I wrote on Francis Tumblety, he was a Jack the Ripper suspect, but he was intersexed. You know, they used to call it hermaphrodite condition, and that, and you know, there are a lot of issues with psychosis with that. But so my editor was made sure that I was not picking on intersex people with intersex conditions or gay because he preferred young men. So I had some arguments with my editor because of that. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I think what's happening is this generation, and I love that they're doing this, this is the best part of it. They're correcting all the damage we did historically. And so they're going the other extreme, you know what I mean? So there's a heightened sensitivity, a heightened sense of danger, when in fact, it's not the danger's not here. I mean, there is danger. Things can happen, but if we could, they're bypassing the whole dialogue part. They're bypassing the whole understanding what's really underneath what's being said. That's what's upsetting.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, I remember that when Sam Smith, the singer, was doing his last tour just before the pandemic, and I know that with one of the reporters that I work with, you know, they get to ask a couple of questions and they do that flash little thing you see on TV, you know, and stuff. And this reporter said, oh yeah, his last album, and Sam Smith did a big freak out on all of us. And he was like, it's not his, it's they. Cause he recognizes himself as, you know, they. And it was just really an embarrassing and awkward moment, because the thing is, you know, I know this person, this wasn't about hurting or upsetting. It was just kind of really crazy. It's like, I don't understand the anger is what I'm saying. I think it surprises me that there's so much anger, because the last thing you want to do is hurt someone. Well, for me anyway, I don't want to call someone something wrong, but if they correct me, I'll be correct. You know what I mean? Then I can follow it. But if I don't know something, I don't understand the anger. I think that's my issue right now.
Yeah, I think, I don't know that I can fully explain it, but I do know there's so much minority stress. There's been so much attack and so much negativity and danger, literally, to the population of gender and coming out as non-binary or trans male, trans female, that they're trying to live through it. They're trying to express themselves, and maybe it's extreme right now. And it's, again, maybe it's a way of correcting the culture so that we come to a better place.
Yeah, I hope so. The last thing I want to do is get someone upset personally.
Right.
You know,
right.
If someone says, hey, Al, no, don't, this is what it is. Oh, okay. I understand it, or I try to, and then kind of move forward. I'm not about getting someone, you know, hurting someone on purpose. So, and I think there's a lot of people like that in my, you know, Gen X sort of area. And it just seems to be an angry backlash right away for things like that. That's all.
I'll tell you. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I just don't understand that. That's all.
What I love about the whole trans community, for me, what it's done for me is made me focus on my masculinity and examine it more closely, because I was always called a sissy boy. When I was a little boy, I used to take my sister's black tights, put them over my head, and sing into a hairbrush and pretend I was Cher and throw back each leg like Cher would do on the Funny and Cher show.
Yeah.
And my family would come in, little boys can't be Cher, you're a little sissy fagala, you know, we're Jewish, you're a fagala. And I was talked out of the way I sat, the way I walked. And today, as this whole trans community is coming forward, I'm like, you know what?
Oh, my.
This is the kind of man I am. And I like to wear sport coats. And I started wearing beard oil and, you know, things that make me feel masculine that may not be traditional to male sports or whatever it is, however you walk, or alpha male or whatever. But I'm every bit of a male in the way I express it. And they've helped me accept myself.
Yeah. Well, and Cher is much more of a man than Sonny was. Let's get realistic.
Oh, my God, that's so true.
You know, I mean, you know, it's just the way I saw it anyway. But
have you ever heard Cher, her mother said, I really want you to marry a rich man? And she said, Mom, I am a rich man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I heard that. It's true. It's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think she's great. I think that, you know. I never did that, but you know, Michael still does. Michael does that now. He still.
Oh, we can do it together.
Of course, of course.
I still have my sister's tights. Oh.
Well, there you go. You see, never thought about doing that, but anyway. Well, so let's see. So now you're doing a practice, and people can get a hold of you and all that stuff. Do you have, like, what's your website? Where's your books? What's your contact information? And you're on TikTok, Sue. So give out your info and have people follow you or find you or complain.
Oh, sure. Yeah, thank you. So my website is my name, Joe Court, JoeKort.com. And then all my social media is at Dr. Joe Court, DrJoeKort. And I'm really just up to 620,000 followers now on TikTok, and I just keep climbing. It's a little bit slower lately, but what I love about TikTok, I have to be honest, is Instagram and Twitter and LinkedIn, your followers are following you because they like you and they know you. On TikTok, you're dropped into each other's homepages. You know, you're dropped into each other's lives, and it starts to spark a controversy. It sparks people thinking about things they never thought about before. So I love it. I would love people to follow me on there and give me feedback about my work. But that's how you would find me. And my address and all my information is on all my stuff.
Great. And, of course, we're going to have that up on the website, too, so people can find it with one click if they aren't sure or they don't remember. So It's all good. Wow. So how was the pandemic for you?
I actually really loved it because before the pandemic, I was traveling twice a month for a company doing LGBT trainings, which I love doing and I miss it, but I wasn't home enough. And my husband has always said to me, you know, I wish you were home more. Well, here I was. And I became more of like a homebody during the 2 years. I gained weight. That sucked, but I got closer with him. And I don't know. I liked it. I had a good experience around it. Did you?
For me, yeah, it cut my traveling totally. I spent a lot more time up here. So I'm starting to do it again now. But, you know, I found that a lot of the guests, they're still not coming back to the studios.
Oh, my God. It has totally changed. Yeah. It's changed the field. I have 15 practitioners that work for me. Now we have 17. We just hired two. And half of them are never coming back to the office. So I have 2,000 square feet of, I'm going to downsize it. Who are people saying I'm always going to be on TV or on telehealth? And we're busy as ever.
Yeah. No, it's kind of crazy because I'm not sure. I keep waiting for the regulars to start back in, you know, and start doing the touring. But no, nobody's doing it. Or they're doing Zoom or they're doing whatever. And that's kind of phoning in and that's it. So I don't know where it's going to go. Who knows?
I know. I don't know. But I will say this. Therapists used to criticize me because I did telehealth. I've been doing telehealth for 10 years, consulting people all over the world because I've written stuff or whatever. But people that couldn't make it to my office, I would, you know, do it. And now that this happened and now they're on telehealth, they say, I'm never going back. Like, they love it now. But therapists are probably the most judgmental people about other therapists.
Yeah. Especially a gay therapist.
No, you know what? I have never experienced anything negative. In fact, I've been their referral source for 30 years.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
See, you find out something new every day. That's what we're all here for. Well, it's been a real pleasure. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed our talk and hope to see you soon one day and come back on again, you know?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. The discussion was great.
Okay. Great speaking with you. That was great.
Yep, you too.
Our guest, Dr. Joe Court. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.